Welcome to Crisp Chat, the half an hour of talk about your favourite crisps from yesteryear. No, I'm only joking. It's the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Of course, we always have a little chat before we start recording. Today was about crisps. We won't bore you with the details on that. We'll talk a little bit about cricket for half an hour or so. How does that sound? My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first, the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are we? All right?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, missing the crisps, but we'll save those for later.
We're always missing the crisps.
Yeah, that's true. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hi, Lavers.
Hello there. No comments on crisps for me.
No, Although, fair enough.
I would be very happy if someone presented a bag of Frazzles for me right now.
Lovely. Tummy rumbles. We'll listen out for those.
Other crisps are available.
Let's get on to the cricket, though. Let's talk about something which popped into my head the other day as an interesting topic to talk about, which is we often on this show talk about how things have changed and how new things are helping and what ways we can, what methods we can use to challenge thinking that is.
But there is definitely a back in my day vibe
around cricket sometimes. And so I wanted to look at it through a different lens and say, well, let's go back a little bit in time and go, well, what was the good stuff that used to happen that doesn't happen anymore that we would like to bring back? What's the old school things in cricket that we would like to see come back that we don't want to challenge when we see them returning?
I think the biggest change in cricket has been batting, isn't it, really? And then the attitude towards batting and the way that the formats have influenced the way that people play now, even the longest format. So 2020 has had a huge influence on the way that we're playing longer format in the game. And something I'd like to see come back will be the ability to deal with a moving ball, I think. I was very lucky last Monday to spend the evening in the company of 50 very fine cricket coaches that were assembled to say goodbye to a bloke called Gordon Lord, who has been incredible for English coach education over the last 25 years. And within the room was Alex Stewart's dad, Mickey, who was the first ever cricket coach for England. And we had a discussion about how the game's changed and what he would like to see return. And he just felt that because the pitches are now so flat in general, we have covers around, that the formats have changed, that basically when the ball goes around, particularly seaming around, that the techniques that people have on offer aren't anywhere near as good as his day, when that was all the ball did, really. It did it constantly for 3 days on the trot in the county championship and then 5 days on the trot when he was playing test cricket. And I think he's right. And we do see it now, don't we? When the ball does go around, we have incredibly short test matches. And it would be fantastic if we could go back to some of those days and see how that game would develop going into day four and day five, when the wicket may have flattened out a little bit. But the challenge we've got now is that when Stuart Broad gets on a run, as good a bowler as he is and as good as he is to get 7 wickets, those 7 wickets happen in a session or a session in a little bit, and we never get to day four and day five to see what the true test of dealing with a changing set of conditions over a longer period of time can actually, what that would actually bring us. So I reckon that's my one. So thank you, Mickey, for that.
And I guess that applies even at lower levels, you know, even at club level, you know, where covers are better and there's more knowledge about pitch preparation, it is going to be leaning more towards the batsman, isn't it, Laver? So I guess you can even take that. You don't have to be playing 5-day cricket to take something from that, do you?
Yeah, I think the message going out is people want to see more runs and people want to see. And the only thing is, like, is actually that what everyone wants to see? Is that the best for developing us as a cricketing nation or as a cricketing world? Is that testing our skills to the maximum? And maybe it isn't, but I think a lot of leagues do, within club cricket, do assess people on the performance of their pitches purely based on the biggest number as the best number, and clearly that's not always the case. We've got to have a balance between bat and ball, and there are certain formats, and probably in 2020 most people would say that the bigger the number the better, really, but other formats have got to be would ideally be really balanced. And I actually think one of the best obsessions of Test cricket I've watched in ages was last week when New Zealand were playing Sri Lanka, and no, they weren't, New Zealand were playing South Africa, and South Africa were batting, and I think they were 9 for 1 after 1 hour, and they were working really hard, and it wasn't doing everything, but it was difficult to score on. They had to work hard, they bowled very, very well, and it suddenly made Test cricket this engaging thing that, yes, there weren't boundaries everywhere, but if I want to see a 4 and a 6, I'll go and watch a 2020 match. I want to see a battle. And that was a battle, it was a test, and that's what it should be. So that was really good to see that those conditions are still out there, even though less frequently than we would have seen in the past.
I'll tell you another thing I'd like to see, certainly in club cricket, since I started playing, you know, however many years ago that was, is... I'd definitely like to see a return to people, oppositions hanging around and mixing with each other at the end of a day's play, because you definitely see that far less than you used to. And even when people stay afterwards, you know, just to be polite and have a one drink in the bar afterwards, it's still rare to see players mixing with each other. They tend to stick in their own group, have one drink and go home, if they even do that. So I'd certainly like to see that cross-pollination of people playing hard on the field and then getting into the bar afterwards and sticking around for a little bit longer and having a couple of drinks and having a chat with those guys and talking about the game and sort of sharing a love for the game rather than, well, you know, we've got to rush off quickly at the end. I don't know whether that would ever happen because the world has changed so much, but I'd certainly be hanging around until a little bit too late.
I think it's important that we try and make that happen, mate. And it's something, I mean, this is the first year that the cricket office has run the summer programme at school. And within our big push this year, you know, we've got some cricket things that we're looking to try and push throughout our age groups. But our biggest one is our ability to host properly. And that doesn't obviously at school level include having a couple of beers in the bar afterwards, but certainly when we've got food on afterwards, we're going to be encouraging our guys to go and get food for the opposition and to sit with their opposite number and have dinner together after the game, or sit with the opening bowler that's tried to knock your block off for 10 overs and have a discussion about the game. And I don't know whether it's going to work. I don't know whether society won't allow that to work, but we're going to give it a massive go. We're also going to get people to you know, walk round cups of tea to people that are on the side of the ground and go back to some of the old-fashioned things that I can remember growing up with in club cricket, whether it was in Somerset when I was very small or whether it was on the Isle of Wight many years ago. It doesn't stop the cricket from being highly competitive, but I'm with you. I think that we've lost something around the interaction and the knowledge that we can pass on, and also the social skills that are so vital within sport, that are so transferable from sport into other aspects of our lives. I think we can facilitate better than we do presently.
Anything you miss, Labus?
Yeah, not enough frazzles around.
From the good old days.
I'm going to relate most things back to food and drinks, I would have thought, but donuts. Where was I? Someone the other day. I was at a school the other day, and they brought out a tray of donuts they were supposed to bring out for all the teams at the start at the lunch break of a tournament. This was rugby, actually, but they forgot to bring them out, so they brought them out at the end of the final. There are only 2 sevens teams left, and there were supposed to be 16 teams there, so there are about 200 donuts for these 14 lads. Lasted about 5 minutes. That's good. One of the things that does happen, and it's not necessarily something I want to see, but it's a noted change, is that I do start to see young people think about cricket as a career, which can be a good thing, and they're pursuing something that there's an opportunity for them to make a living out of, which is good, and obviously it's spilling over into the female game as well now, which is nice to see. However, there are some people who, as soon as it doesn't become a career, it doesn't go back to being a game anymore. It then gets pushed aside or cast aside. And I don't really like that. I think I'd, it still needs to be retained as what it is, which is a game, and it's supposed to be fun. And ideally, if people can't make it to the top level, they play at the level below, and people play at the highest level they can. And I do start to see some cricketers, and it's not a lot, but it is more than I would have seen in the past. So if they don't quite make it to the level that they wanted to, which whether it's professional or whatever, then they don't filter into the level below and persist and try and force their way up. They put it down and they go and pick someone else up, and they go and look at doing something else. And I just think that's a little bit disappointing sometimes, when they've obviously committed a lot of time to get to a certain level, and they've had a lot of enjoyment over the years, and there's no reason that can't be continued, even if it's not in a capacity where you're getting paid to do so.
Yeah, I do see a similar thing with some players who have played at a higher level, and then they come back to club level. And it's almost like for them, it feels like a climb down, you know, because they've played at a higher level, and then for various reasons they can't play at that level anymore, and they come back to, you know, they come back to earth almost, and they're playing club cricket with guys who are not as talented as they are, and it's almost like you kind of lose your enthusiasm, because you think, well, I've done so much better than this, and now I've got to settle for something else. And I don't think it's arrogance. I think it's just human nature to think. You know, to think, well, I could be doing so much better, but I'm not. So maybe I'm just going to put it aside. But in fact, you can still enjoy the game, whatever level you're playing at, as long as you go in with the right mindset of, well, I'm gonna play my cricket, I'm gonna enjoy it, and it's gonna be good, no matter what, you know, whether I'm playing professionally or not.
Yeah, I do. I see that a lot, mate. And again, I think that's a bit of a link to society, that people want that instant success and want to be deemed to be progressing at all times. But the bottom line is, I think the two are linked here a little bit. A few of the concepts that we talked about are linked. If your experience is broader than just how many runs and how many wickets that you get on a Saturday, going back to those old club mentalities and the way that the club was the family, I suppose, that sat around us as we grew up, I think that people will be retained within the game better. It's about overall experience, isn't it, that it provides for people. And there are a number of clubs that have got unbelievably good retention numbers as people get older, and as their skills, I suppose, wane and their physicality wanes, because they've retained some of those old ethos from years gone by that all cricket clubs seem to have when I was growing up. Now, maybe I'm being a bit Fred Truman and back in my day with that one.
But that's the point of this.
but I honestly do believe that we can recreate or re-establish some of those things that made us all want to be around cricket clubs, and every day of the winter made us look forward to that circle, which was around the first Saturday of the season, like we used to do. And I think if we have that again, then we'll retain people as they reach their peak and go beyond it. And, you know, cricket should be a lifelong sport, shouldn't it? It's not one of these sports that once you can't perform at your best, that you should bail out of. There are so many roles, jobs, opportunities that are being developed, more so than there ever has been, I suppose. And we should be in it for a lifetime, certainly. I think we're probably bad examples of this, but if cricket was taken out of our lives, then it would be a pretty hollow life that we would lead, wouldn't it?
Yeah, although I think my girlfriend would be delighted that she'd actually see me once in a while.
Yeah, that would only last for a week or so though, mate, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah. Now it's time on the show to move on to listeners' questions. Questions that have been sent in by you, the listener, or by readers of the Pitch Vision website over at pitchvision.com. And how that works is we answer a couple of those questions, and then we pick a winner. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, or we'll tell you more about how you can get in touch with us in other ways towards the end of the show. And the first person who has got in touch with us this week is, it's either Vi or V. I think it might be V. And V says, What are the key points that should be considered while doing back of the hand slower balls? Good technical question.
Back of the hand slower balls. Well, it's something that we're seeing quite a lot of now, isn't it? And it's actually a ball that I'm finding that young players in particular find quite easy to bowl once they've seen it or been introduced to it. And it goes back to when I talked to my dad about teaching young kids to bowl. He reckons that most kids, when they first bowl a ball, once you've taught them the old method of standing and doing the old windmilly thing or whatever the case may be, that most people will bowl a leg spinner or a leg cutter when they first start to bowl as a kid. It's a natural way. So our shoulders tend to go from external rotation into internal rotation, which is like a leg cutter, leg spinner. And so if you teach people young enough, then often they find it really easy for their fingers to go even further round in internal rotation of their arm and their shoulder to allow the ball to come out as a back of a hand or, you know, over the top of the fingers, slower ball. So I teach people young. I think it's the easiest one to teach young people. I think the off-spinning version is the easiest one to teach or an off-cutting version, a slightly older person, because their range of motion and what have you. But it's a pretty easy one to go with for young guys, mate, because of that internal rotation element at the end of, into release and into follow-through when we do bowl. So I reckon it's a pretty easy one to go with. And all you're really looking to do, start them off with bowling a leg spinner, a leg cutter. That's always a starting point, and even if that leg cutter comes out nicely as a slower ball, fantastic. But just a little bit more rotation, and you get to that one that comes out over the back. The other thing that I found has helped, very similar to a googly, is dropping the front side of the body. The left shoulder for a right arm bowler early often helps us to get that vertical, because you need to have a vertical arm path right above your head to get this one out the back of your fingers, I suppose. Just in the same way as we've taught googlies down the years, I reckon that's a pretty good one as well.
And Leavis, what about guys who are a little bit older? Perhaps it's you know, they've taught themselves, you know, to get the fingers behind the seam and all the rest of it, but now they know they want to get the benefits of bowling one of these crazy back of the hand balls, which is tricky, isn't it? So where do you start with it?
Yeah, I mean, anything's tricky, isn't it, when you've got a particular pattern or method that you've been setting in it for a long period of time. On the younger bit, very quickly, I agree with Gara's dad. I do see that happen a lot, and then they're younger. And I have a theory on it as well. If you think about how a young cricketer lines up the ball, I don't know what your picture in your head is, but you often see a young cricketer line up the ball. They're trying to line up through the middle of their eyes. And because of that, their arms are coming across the front of their body. And because of that, they then withdraw their bowling arm quite wide and come across the ball. So they're kind of cutting across it anyway because of where they try and aim through a ball. So that's one thing with young cricketers. Generally, though, with seamers, you'll find that the back of the hand ball does come a bit more naturally to those who are sideways on or midway to sideways on, because there's less rotation of the shoulder, less rotation of the wrist required from that position to get to a seam up delivery around the back of the ball than there is from a front on position where you're 90 degrees further round effectively. So if you're struggling and you are a front on bowler, first of all, don't be surprised, because it's a little bit tricky to get to that position from a front on position. But also don't just assume that it is something you can't do. Whether it's a treatment of range of movement or flexibility exercises that will help you to try and get that rotation of shoulders and wrist all the way around so you can get it vertical again, or it's just a matter of changing the path of your bowling arm or potentially your grip. Ideally, there shouldn't be too much change, and it should be something that just by slowing down, trying to control your body and thinking about where you want to get to with your release, and even if it's just from a standing position and it's not actually using a ball, but you're trying to get the back of your hand pointing straight down the pitch, can you get into that position from a slow, controlled or even stationary position? If you can, we can then start building back up towards where we need to be. If you can't get there, then there's potentially a course of action that we need to go through to try and develop that range of movement and that range of rotation in the shoulders or the wrist to get around there, or potentially it's something you put aside and you look for another opportunity. There are lots and lots of methods we can use to fool a batsman. Very few bowlers have all of them, and lots of bowlers do very well with one or two. So think about its value to you. If it's what you need, if you're finding it really difficult and there's something else that works just as well, then let's look to try and build in another skill as well. But yeah, try it. See if you can get into that position and then try building up towards a full pace delivery along the line.
I think a crucial thing to success of a slower ball is that the ball that people think you're going to bowl most is also quite good. And there is a sort of propensity for a lot of people to try loads of different variations without actually having a stock ball or a ball that you go to, which is fantastic. And you know, somebody like Ian Harvey, for example, was the first exponent for me who bowled unbelievable slower balls, but his slower ball was only as good as the fact that he also had a Yorker in there that came out at 80 odd mile an hour as well. So, you know, if somebody has only got slower balls or only got variation and they don't have the capacity to hit length, be able to bowl a bumper on the right pitches and be able to bowl Yorkers on any pitches, then, you know, your slower balls, really, it doesn't matter whether you've got two, three or four, you're not actually going to have anything to sort of calibrate against. And deception comes from not knowing what's going to happen rather than going, well, it's going to be one of three slower balls and I just need to pick which one it is. Going back to society, I think that's what people do now, don't they? They're always looking for that special thing. Well, Ian Harvey was world class at what he did because he had a world class Yorker in there as well as having a world class slower ball.
Years ago, I remember John Lewis, Gloucestershire bowler for many years and England, say that the ratio for practice should be, you know, 80% of, you know, what you would bowl most of the time and 20% of those variations. Do you think that still applies?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a pretty fair way to go, mate, to be honest with you. And whether the percentages are precisely that or not is neither here nor there. Yeah. I think you've got to, you know, John Lewis was a great example. So Louis's length ball was fantastic. You know, he could go into length, he could nip it about a bit, and then he built some variations off the back of that and did brilliantly, created a fantastic career for himself. After having been turned down by a couple of counties, he ended up being an England international, and he did it off of that type of thinking and ratio.
Next question's from Alex. And Alex, it's an age-old question. How do you convert more 20s into big scores?
It's a little bit like we talk about getting through your first 20 balls. What's the importance of getting through your first balls and first 20 balls and what's your focus like in the first 20 balls? And often that is the time where your focus is at its highest, and inevitably more batsmen are able to get to 20 than are to get to 40 or to 60 or 100, etc. So I guess it's a case of managing your focus and trying to keep the levels of concentration when you're in and you're relaxed and you're maybe taking some things for granted, as opposed to that level of focus you have when you're new to the crease and you're working really hard. And that doesn't mean we want to take away some of the things that come when you're in and we're relaxed, because obviously you can be a bit more free-flowing and a bit more comfortable at the crease. So it's getting the right balance throughout the innings of retaining focus, retaining concentration in the manner that suits you. And for some people that is about being very focused in on a specific thing and having a high level of intensity, and for others that will be being quite chilled out and quite calm about things. But I would say managing your focus throughout, and also managing your game plan as the game evolves around you. Everyone's been in and started an innings a lot more times than they've been and played that 30 to 50 or 50 to 100. So people are generally a bit more experienced at how they're trying to get from 0 to 20. But getting from there to 100 is a job that you get much less exposure to. So understanding how your game plan is going to evolve, and do you just continue to bat the same way? Do you bat to a new way that suits the situation? And have you thought about in advance what those options might be in this new situation where fields are spread and the ball gets a little bit flatter and maybe the expectation upon you goes up? So yeah, I'd think about how you manage your expectations and how you plan for that bit, because so often our planning is those first 20 balls, and it's how we get to 30, which is a lot of our focus and our time goes towards.
Do you think, Gareth, that I've certainly heard this case several times, that there's a case for practicing batting longer to get used to batting longer? Do you think it's a simple 1-2 like that?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's a pretty good adage, I suppose. But in terms of, you know, getting 20 or 30 and then kicking on, I think it's about sticking to your game plan to a point. Whatever's got you to that point is sticking to it. If I think back to listening to some good players against some guys that would often get out for 30s, I think what they do is that they get to 30 and they either think they've done okay, so then they shift their mental focus, or they just forget what got them to 20 and 30 as a mental process in the first place. And what tends to happen when we get in is that our scoring areas increase, don't they? Because we become more acclimatised to the conditions that we're playing in, that we're, you know, letting the ball come on an appropriate distance. All of those things that we calibrate happen. But actually, a mental process needs to be fairly consistent, I would suggest. And certainly the research that's been put around the top level performers is that their routines remain the same, their thought processes remain the same. The only thing that changed was that their scoring areas increased as they became more set. I certainly remember playing in professional cricket, getting to 30 and would become quite relaxed in my own head, and as a result of that I used to get out between 30 and 35 on a regular basis. But that was me setting a ceiling of what success looked like on in my own head. And I think one of the things that these great players nowadays do, particularly in one-day cricket, is 70 was deemed to be a match-winning score, wasn't it, as an individual score not too long ago. And now you can get 125, 130 and still end up on the losing side. The ceiling is being raised all of the time. So if we place a ceiling on ourselves, then we're often going to meet that. I talked the other day to a colleague of mine the other day about yo-yos and bleep tests, how many people set their own ceiling on that and then finish as soon as they've met that ceiling. Whereas the best people don't set their own ceiling, they just keep going until they've got nothing left. And I don't think that's any different for batting as well. So to me, keep your routines and also don't tell yourself what is success.
Yeah, that's a really powerful one. That I remember. I mean, I didn't have many great innings, but I remember one good innings I played in a club game, in a club second team game, where we were chasing a relatively low score, 150 something like that. And I got to about 40, and I felt myself thinking, oh great, we're at a point here where we can't lose because we were one wicket down. So you know, we're pretty much done and dusted here. But then I thought to myself, no, I want to be the one here at the end of the game, not just the one who contributes the most and then gets out in some way because he's had enough. And I batted through to the end, finished on 60-odd, not out, you know, wasn't a massive score. But the point was that I was there at the beginning, I was there at the end, and I went through that moment of going, oh, well, I've done enough here, I can relax now. And then I realised, and then kicked on to the end, and that was... I felt like, anyway, that was down to having the focus to say, I'm going to see it through to the end here, rather than just saying, well, that's my work here is done, that's great, I feel happy about that. So it definitely, just from a personal experience, that definitely works. Having that focus to keep going definitely works.
And I think the real strength comes, because that's a great example, isn't it, that making yourself go through to the end when the game is won. But sometimes we bat first and people find it more difficult to have that focus because there's not a definitive target, is there, as such? So the real disciplined people do find a way of continuing and continuing and continuing and not putting that ceiling on themselves, even though you still don't know whether that score is going to be enough at the end of 50 overs or 20 overs to guarantee you to win the game. But, you know, people find a way of getting through to 100 and something, not out batting first, whereas it's probably easier to do it batting second because you've got that end, that finish post in sight. So if you can do it first and second, you're well on the way.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. There's one more thing we need to do, though, before we go, and that is decide on the winner of this week's competition. The two options on the table were the questions sent in. One was from Vi about back-of-the-hand slower balls. And the other was from Alex about converting 20s into big scores. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with the slower ball one. I think it was really specific, wasn't it? And hopefully a couple of methods there. But young people, I think, bowl it pretty well. And you can teach that young. As long as they've got that understanding of how to deliver the stock ball, teach it as young as you possibly can. And then secondly, drop that shoulder, very much similar to trying to get that wrist round and bowl a googly, but obviously doing it at a faster pace. So I'm going to go with that one this week.
Fantastic. And if someone else was listening into the show and they wanted to win the prize, get their question answered, could they get in touch with us?
They could drop us a line on 0203 239 7543 or put it through a email on coach@pitchvision.com.
Email, yes, remember them? Just like in the old days. Well, there's other ways to get in touch with us as well. Modern things like the Pitch Vision website, which has a messaging system. You can contact us through that at pitchvision.com, or you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. There's a page there that you can send in questions. And Twitter, if it's 140 characters or fewer, @pitchvisionacad is where we are. You can listen to this show every week by subscribing. That's free, and you can do it by any podcast app. Go in there, search for Pitch Vision Academy, tap on the subscribe button, and away you go. It comes out every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, or you want to stream the show from the web, or you want to listen to any old shows by downloading them, you can do all that on the Pitch Vision website, pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.